The opinions expressed are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the official positions of the sponsors, advertisers, or presenters. Advertising does not imply endorsement by the sponsors and presenters.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Lighting Controls Podcast. We have another fantastic guest for you today, but before we jump into the conversation, let me just take a minute to remind everyone that today's episode is presented by the LCA, the Lighting Controls Association.
And it's financially supported by NAILD, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Check out our website, lightingcontrolspodcast.com, where we have a news feed, all of our episodes, a merch store, trainings that are coming up that Ron or I might be doing, as well as the council that we've talked about before. But if you're unfamiliar with the council we've just founded, you should check it out and see what how to get involved if you're interested. Additionally, huge shout out to our sponsor for this episode. Thank you so much to MW Connect. If you are not familiar with this name, that's because they just rebranded. They are no longer Mick Wong. They are MW Connect. And you can find them at mwconnect.us. And they are... Congratulations for 40 years in the business. I mean, that right there is a claim to fame. And so they've really just been involved in lighting controls and connecting people and groups and technologies for a long time. Really great stuff. Highly recommend checking them out. mwconnect.us, no longer McWong. If you're unfamiliar with either of those names, definitely worth looking at their website and also seeing any of their materials that they have. They have some great literature out there to help you understand lighting controls. But until then, let's get into the conversation. So today we have Carol. Carol, do you mind just giving us a quick breakdown on who you are and what you do?
Yeah. Thanks for having me. That's what you're supposed to say at the beginning of a podcast. Right?
Yes. Well, that's what a lot of people say anyways. I mean, I don't know if it's a requirement.
I've always thought that somebody tells you to do that because it happens every time, right? Anybody interviewed on TV, anybody interviewed everywhere. Thanks for having me. So I figure that must have been the first instruction. You guys didn't tell me to do that, but, you know, I didn't want to be wrong.
No, we don't tell anybody to thank us. We're just here to talk. We don't need thanks.
Yeah. I'll either thank you or not at the end, right?
Regardless, thank you for your time and joining us here, because you are, as an interviewee, a volunteer. And so your time is valuable to us. We appreciate you coming on.
Is there a difference
between us and you?
Anyway. No, I mean, to volunteer and paid, it's like there's been so much of both.
Yeah.
Okay,
fair enough.
So let me back up. I'm getting us off track. Okay. So I started as a specifier. I worked at, and I'll say the name of the firm, they're a great firm, Horton Lees Brogdon, which used to be, well, another HLB. It used to be Horton Lees back in the day. And then I got scooped by PNNL, which is Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, because of the energy codes work. And so I got pulled into that, and there, off she were. I was 17 years at the lab, doing all kinds of DOE programs, multi-year programs, research, human factors, energy effective lighting, lighting quality, all these things. And towards the end of it, I got involved in digital lighting, and we were doing research on digital lighting. What does that actually mean? And what, you know, how does it benefit you? And so there's a project that I started called the Light Right Consortium that researched how you can use digital lighting, including personal control, etc. So we found that personal control really makes a difference to performance in offices, and that was cool. And then I did a bunch of work on best practices, the IES lighting quality, what is it? God, it's been so long. DG18, that's what it is, DG18. And put a bunch of that stuff into literature, and from there I went to Philips, Enlighted, and Axis Lighting. And now I'm technically independent, but I'm here today as part of the DALI Alliance, and very happy to be working with them, because it's a full-on mission thing for me. I look back and there are years and years and years leading up to this point where we are right now. So it's a great thing to be doing.
I agree completely. I think, you know, the work that the DALI Alliance is doing is really phenomenal. And the work you're doing to support them is also incredible. You know, I sat in on your presentation at NYC Controlled, and it was really top notch. So, you know, all the work that's coming into North America to try to move that needle when it comes to DALI is really excellent, and I'm a full supporter. I think Ron is too. And I think what's really fascinating, I love the trajectory of your career up to this point. You and I actually overlap in our experiences because you worked at HLB when it was Horton Lees Brogdon, and I worked at HLB when it was when it became HLB. So we kind of both got our feet wet with those experiences, but I think the landscape of the lighting world is so different even from like 4 years ago when I was at HLB. And I can only imagine how much has changed since when you were originally at Horton Lees Brogdon.
Are
And
you
so
calling me old? Are you seriously? I was there when George Horton was there. So, yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
That was not my
No,
intended message. I apologize if
that's
that's
okay. That's okay. I've earned my stripes, but it's I agree with you about HLB. It's a great place to get started. Getting started in lighting design at all is a really great thing to do because I don't know that there's any other way to have a full appreciation for how everything comes together. It's just yeah, I mean, I was talking to Scott earlier this morning and about bios and sort of thing, and one of the things I mentioned in one of my bios has to do with theatrical lighting. I was involved with theatrical lighting, and you were too, yeah, right?
Yes.
I
We
have this
both were.
recollection, yeah, we both were, and production management as well. It has to do with pulling everything together. So it's so stuff like consortia work, market transformation, codes and standards, all of these things are all about remembering how what everybody needs and thinking about how to make sure that we can have this overlapping Venn diagram so that everybody in the room is actually getting their needs met as much as possible,
No,
So,
and I
yeah.
think, that is really an interesting perspective because a lot of people always go, well, why are there so many controls people or so many lighting people who start in theater and get sucked into this environment? And it's like, well, there is something about that environment that really trains one to have that holistic mindset. And so, but there's a lot of other variables as well, I think, depending on where in the theatrical trade you operated, you've learned a different set of skills, but you still need to be conscious and aware of each other's skills. So I think it really is a team effort, and there's a lot of teamwork and collaboration to be had and learned from
Agreed.
working in that environment.
Yep.
So yeah, so throughout your time in this industry, and again, not trying to highlight the age of the person, but the age of
Experience,
the
experience.
wisdom. Yeah, I mean,
Yeah, there
you
we
have
go.
so much that you have seen. What do you think of where we're at right now? What's going on when it comes to especially lighting controls?
Well, it's not, I what I think is going on right now is that we are at a tipping point. You could argue that we've been at tipping points before. The problem is we've tipped the wrong way as an industry. And what I mean by that is that we haven't really been able to see the big picture. It's it, at Nor NY Controlled, when you mentioned that a few minutes ago, I started out by talking about the forest and the trees. I think that was the name of it, actually. And I have this cartoon in one of my in my deck that talks about I can't see the forest for the trees. Cut the trees down, Mr. Henderson. And it's we have been in controls. We have been from the get a proprietary industry. It's just always been proprietary, and there hasn't really been a, to be fair, there hasn't really been a compelling reason for the controls manufacturers to do anything differently. I mean, there's a history and a culture of competing and differentiating against each other. And unfortunately, the project flow, the project process, the experience flow, whatever you want to call it, is does not involve us in relationship to owners, occupants, tenants. We don't have a chance to really engage with these folks. And if you think about the project cycle, the people that we deal with are the folks that put everything together beforehand, and then people go in the building and we have nothing to do with it, whether it's the financial or the outcomes for the occupants or the mission or whatever. we are just not involved. And so we have no reason to be, I mean, aside from the sort of theoretical and the kumbaya thing, we have not had a reason to really seriously consider the owners and the tenants in the way that we do now. Mm-hmm. So I think where we are in controls going backwards is that we've functioned very much in an isolated way. Mm-hmm. And we can't do that anymore. Yeah, I'm thinking about the elephant in I wrote an article for Randy Reed's magazine, Designing Lighting, and if you want to see it, go to my LinkedIn page. There's a link there. But the cover picture is of an elephant sitting down at a big glass window all by itself in a room. And the article is about the elephant in the room being that we're not interoperable as an industry. Right. You know, and you want to go deep with the metaphor. The elephant is alone. There's nobody else in the room looking through a plate glass window at the rest of the world and what's going on. So that's kind of where I think we're at. I think we are just not engaged in the big picture conversations. I'm not saying none of us are talking about it. I'm not saying none of us are aware of it. I'm not saying people don't care about it. I'm saying that in terms of a practical relationship with the rest of the digital building, we aren't there. And market drivers, if you think about, you know, what are the market drivers? Start with COVID. And mm-hmm. when people went back to work, they did not go back full time. You could say arguably they probably never will go back full time. And then all of a sudden there was this tension around who's where when.
Right.
Yeah. And it was a big mess trying to figure out who was going to be where, because some things you need to be in person and other things you really don't. And so there was a lot of interest in the owner community about how to make that information available automatically, real time. How do you do that? You do that with sensors, mm-hmm. you know, and the sensor thing has been a bit fraught in our industry, which, you know, I know so much about that so there are reasons why it's been fraught. And there are reasons why, good reasons, and to some degree, unfortunate reasons why the plethora of sensors powered by lighting hasn't happened in the way that we want. I'm not going to go there. My point is this, that when lighting didn't show up with the, you know, with the sensors everywhere, the ubiquitous sensors that we were all talking about, they found another way to do it. You know, mm-hmm. lick and stick sensors, people counters, desk sensors, you know, there's CO2, there's a whole bunch of different kinds of sensors. This is not a simple situation anymore. Like, oh, gee, it's about integrated sensors and IoT. And it's just not that simple anymore. And it hasn't been for a while. So in the meantime, LEDs have been installed. It's not done by any means, but the larger buildings, the more progressive markets, and the place, you know, it's all LED now in terms of anything new that's happening. And it's been that way long enough that even the replacement of fluorescent, you just can't anymore. So the market has turned. And now that that's happened, we can't go to a building owner anymore and say, or we can't have anybody go to a building owner on our behalf and say, lighting is 30% of your building in energy consumption.
Right. Yeah.
Because now it's more like 10 or 11. And I'm talking about, you know, some research that says it's at that level. That's for commercial properties. It's not the same everywhere. But we don't have an energy case anymore.
Right.
It's not a high value proposition anymore. And you want to put controls in on top of LEDs when you didn't do it before, which we knew needed to happen and didn't. We now must find a way for owners and occupants, owners and operators, I should say, to put in lighting controls. And if they're, where is the value? The value is in connecting to the rest of the digital building. That is where the value is. It's not just about what the occupant experiences, the ability. I'm not saying it's not about personal control. Personal control is great, but that's not enough. Mm-hmm. And even if you are capturing data in a granular way so that you can do your dimming in relationship to occupancy, even if you are doing that. That's not enough. You must be engaged with the building in a more holistic way, in an integrated way, so that you can have use cases on top of each other. The best approach right now, where we're at, not looking backward, just saying where we are right now, is stacking these value propositions on top of each other.
Right.
Because lighting can matter when it comes to things like integration with HVAC. It can matter when it comes to a relationship to the conference rooms and the room reservation system and, you know, demand response, peak load, interactive grid, all of these different things that are going on. Electrification is a big deal. That is going to change things radically. It's already started. And because of that, this interactive grid conversation is something we have to pay attention to.
Well, this is.
Well, let me back up. We don't have to pay attention to it. The owners
sure.
have to pay attention to it.
Right.
Right.
Well,
and
I think.
And they are paying attention because the cost matters. If they do it now, it's less expensive than doing it later when the numbers all go up.
Well, I think this is, you know, this is just, again, like, we did not curate this, but this is coming on the heels of several conversations we've had on this topic. We were chatting with the DLC earlier. We were chatting with Craig DeLuey, you know, and so this topic keeps coming up, and I don't disagree. I mean, I worked with a few colleagues to do a presentation at Lightfair a couple years ago on this topic. And so, you know, this is a really critical piece of information is like, okay, you know, how do we maintain that value proposition and ensure that people are going to be utilizing the technology available to them? And I think to your point, it's like, okay, we're isolated at this point. We don't have the ability we have the ability to, but we're not connecting to the rest of the building in a way that helps leverage the resources that we're providing. You know, the argument being presented in a lot of cases is, well, you have lighting, you have lighting controls. Why don't you just use the lighting controls for everything else? And it's like, that's a great idea. Where do we go from here?
Right. Where do we go from here? Well, that brings us to the, there's the why, right? I often go this way. There's the why, the what, and the how. Mm-hmm. So the what is really interoperability. If I'm a building owner, and I you know, let me back up. People tend to talk about lighting in buildings as if it's one way. Oh, well, it's going to be this way. It's going to be that way. It's going to be there. Let's start by saying, let's segment this, okay? Let's just start by getting real with the fact that there's new construction. There's major renovation, which is very much like new construction because you're pulling permits. You're often gutting the space. You know, think about New York City. There's tenant fit out, which is in between those two, and there's retrofit. The numbers are totally different. The workflow is completely different. The professionals are different. That, you know, so everything's different about those things. So I'm not saying that that what I'm talking about is going to apply everywhere. I know that. What I am saying is that the trend line is going in this direction, and that when it comes to the big picture where things are headed, the folks right now who are the most competent, have the largest portfolios, have staff that understand these things. They have sustainability officers, decarbonization officers, real estate executives, you know, hundreds of millions of square feet. Those folks are the early adopters, and what they want is something that's going to work long term. So if they, you know, if I'm, I'll pick somebody, Deloitte, right, and I've got this huge global footprint, and I have a lot of very competent staff that know a lot about buildings, and so if I'm them or any of the other, you know, think West Coast, right, think about Apple and Uber and the folks like that, where they've, you know, again, progressive on a lot of levels. If I'm those people and I have a building that I'm going to own for a long time, you know, a long-term asset, let's say, as they would say it, I am not going to invest in something that I might have to, if I put in somebody's sensors, a digital lighting system that is proprietary, how am I going to know that they're going to be there in 10 years?
Right.
I can't. Yeah. It's just, and more than ever before, I'm not criticizing anybody. I'm not saying that the newer you are, that, you know, I'm not saying that. Sometimes the newest ones have the best tech. We all know that innovation is awesome. The problem is that even if you've got the best technology and you've done phenomenal innovation, if you're new, it's going to be a concern to the building owners. And even if you're not new, they're still thinking that way. That's just the way that it's smart. That's the way they should be thinking. So if you put in a new technology that's proprietary, by definition, as far as they're concerned, it can't be maintained. Mm-hmm. And that's where interoperability comes in. Software is always going to be a differentiator, and it should be. Well, it's just not. If you had software that was the same, call it, maybe I should be saying interchangeable, then that's just ridiculous. We know that's never going to happen. But the parts, right? The hardware, drivers, sensors, yep, need to be maintainable.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We need to be able to change. If you put in a driver with us and such a brand over here, and it's 10 years later and you can't get that anymore, whether it's the SKU or the manufacturer, you need to be able to put something else in. And if you don't do that, you know, if you can't do that, it's going to give them great pause. And I don't say this because I'm guessing. I'm not saying this because I'm mind reading the persona. I'm saying it because I've talked with a lot of people about this.
Right.
So when I joined Dally, my first thing is, okay, this is a picture. Come back to the lighting thing. This is a holistic picture. We have the owners, we have the operators, then we have the people who do, and the tenants, and then we have the people who do the buildings, and the people who do the, you know, so you go through and you figure out all of these different personas and what parts do they play. You can't push technology and expect it to get adopted.
Right.
It's just, you know, we should be interoperable. Has not worked.
Yeah.
It's never going to work.
Yeah.
Webster
and I have had this conversation numerous times about interoperability and the fact that, mm-hmm, all the manufacturers are maintain proprietary. Well, not all. I shouldn't say all. Many manufacturers maintain proprietary systems, and there's going to be a race, and a lot of the manufacturers, unfortunately, are still focused on right now and making money and coming out of COVID and still dealing with part shortages and this and that. And I understand all of that. I do. But we're looking at other, you know, other teams who are going to get there, or potentially a different industry altogether. This could be HVAC says, you know what, we're going to pick this up and run with
yeah,
it.
Right.
And you
yeah,
guys yeah, missed the boat. And how do we stop that from happening?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I have been concerned about when I talk with all these different people. Webster, you know this because I was talking to you about my travel schedule last fall. I went to something like 10 conferences in 11 weeks or some crazy thing like that. And they were varied, right? So this stuff you're talking about, some of us have been having these conversations, but I had occasion to talk to that persona, the owner, the operator. That's what I've been talking about lately, what I've been putting articles together about that. So when we get to the how do we change it, how do we fix it, that's where Dally comes in, because mm-hmm, Dally is the global, you know, digital addressable lighting interface, in case you're not familiar with it, because not everybody is in North America, straight up.
Right.
Not everybody
right,
knows who Dally is. And it's a terrific thing. You know, the Alliance creates the specifications. The specifications mm-hmm, get promulgated into an IEC standard, and they've been around for a long time. A couple, 20 years, I think. I should know this, but it's a long time. And so that matters, because there is a, it still is Dally, right? The protocol is still going to talk mm-hmm, to anything that is Dally, whether it's the version one or whether it's Dally two, et cetera. So there are certain core aspects of it that are staying the same, which make it trustworthy. So when you think about long-term protocols like this, BACnet is an example, TCP/IP, mm-hmm, there are certain protocols that go long. Dally is one of those. And there is a way, part of what I really like about this is how Dally is committed to partnership and committed to this interoperability. They are functioning as a team player, in my view. That's the way I see it. I see them functioning in a way which is, how do we find a way to connect everywhere we possibly can? Evidence of that are the two specifications. One of the most recent, so 341 and 342, are specifications about how to relate to Bluetooth and Zigbee. Mm-hmm. Specifically, technically, that's called a gateway. But it really, I think, in North America, we think of it in terms of an interface, right? It's not a piece of equipment, is what I'm trying to say. It's a method of communication too. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that there is a way to have the DALI protocol speak to the Bluetooth systems and trade information. And why that matters to the owner and the operator is that when you get into the DALI format, which is it's a particular specified schema, it's you can predict exactly where you're going to get the same information from. So your fault diagnostics is going to come from here. Your energy, you know, your energy monitoring real time is going to come from here. Your calibration for color, right? The DT8, where you've got digital calibrations so that you are able to look across different fixture types and it will be the same color. Right. You've got color constancy. That's a big deal. All of these different things, emergency testing, asset information, what kind of luminaire am I? How much mm-hmm. wattage am I, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes where do I live? Things like that. It is going to be consistent. So the data that comes out of the DALI protocol is something that the next level of platform folks can trust. Yeah. And it's clear that there are going to be a number of different ways of managing the lighting control system. It's clear. It's good.
Well, and this and also...
We're not trying to achieve same. We're trying to achieve interoperability. That's the difference, right? So those kinds of decisions. Zaga, Zaga Book 20 and Book 18, there's been terrific collaboration there with that organization so that there's a way to change out the sensors, indoor or outdoor.
Yeah.
Huge. Huge deal. You know, there's a lot in place. Yeah.
I would say that, you know, consistency, it's not about sameness, like you said. It's, you know, the expectation of performance. And so, you know, there was a recent report that came out about the consistency of 0 to 10 volt dimming energy performance and how
the
drivers...
What about 0 to 10?
How the dimming range really varies wildly from manufacturer to manufacturer and driver to driver. It's
better,
not like, you know, 1% of... output adds per the 0 to 10 volt signal is actually the same 1% throughout the drivers. And so as a result, you know, there is no consistency because it's not part of the standard requirement, and nor really as an analog signal is it really a good thing to create that expectation of performance. But the reality of the situation is that that's one of the things that DALI really tries to provide is a consistency. You know, if I say I want a DALI driver and I want it to dim to 1%, that 1% should be consistent throughout the luminaires that I'm using. And so I don't have to keep tinkering with or change my expectations. It should be okay. Yeah. Okay. Fine. If it's a linear dimming curve where you're just going from, you know, 0 to 100, there's an expectation of what that output's going to be of the fixture's output versus a logarithmic, but otherwise there should really be no variance.
Yeah, agreed. When you say that, my mind went to specifiers.
Yes.
And thinking back to when I was a specifier. And it's interesting because specifiers really do want interoperability. They really do. And have been saying that for a very long time and asking for it. But they don't have the power to make that happen. They have a lot of battles to fight as it is now. And we all know that. They're going to fight the battles that they can win. And this has historically been something that they couldn't win for all the reasons we've talked about. But they do have to manage it. And so that means going to lengths to figure out, okay, what is the, you know, what is the dimming curve for this driver, this 0 to 10 volt driver? What is the dimming curve for that one? How do I know for sure? Do I need to test it myself? Do I need to bring it into my lab? And that there's a lot of work involved in trying to make that happen. It's not necessary. It's not necessary.
Right.
If you have the DALI protocol, you have a digital dimming curve and you can ensure that it's going to be the same.
I mean, and I would say that, you know, the specifiers in my head are basically saying, well, you know, what about this? What about this? And so it's like, you know, there's this pushback that happens when you start considering a digital platform versus an analog platform that is, it's more expensive. And, you know, it's like, well, it's visible expense versus invisible expense. And I would say that the time spent testing 0 to 10 volt drivers or ELV drivers for that matter is time that could have been saved had you only spent a little bit more on the fixture. And that way you could have just avoided having to go through this whole mock-up process. I mean, granted, there's still the need for mock-ups. Don't
Sure.
take it that way. But you know, you don't need to test your Dolly driver performing on the Dolly controller to make sure that the compatibility is there and your expectation of performance is there.
But there's cost savings on the install,
There's also
right? I
that.
mean,
But that's,
you're not running all the analog cable.
when you say that the time spent with the 0 to 10 volt drivers, I like to be devil's advocate a little bit, and I'm
Sure.
hearing the lighting designers in my head saying, yeah, but it's pretty easy because we figured that out a long time ago.
Right.
And so that's true. And people now, I mean, nobody's going to say that 0 to 10 is hard. It has its limitations, but it's not hard. The perception about digital systems, whether they be proprietary or not, is that they're hard. That is not true. Is it a learning curve? Yes. I mean, I'm speaking about DALL-E. I'm not talking about
Sure.
every digital lighting system ever, right? What I'm saying is that, so for instance, in installation, there's a concern about installation. Am I going to lose money? Do I know how to do this? It's not like it's the only, you know, two wire system on the market. So it is not rocket science, and the installers are not going to believe that until they do it, or until there's some education or awareness to actually say, look, it's really not that bad. And in fact, you're going to have higher predictability, you're going to have a lot less time and labor, you're going to have fewer problems on your punch list. It's almost hard to go wrong, you could say, with this. It's just a
So,
question of being willing to traverse that learning curve, right? And we're going to help with that. I mean, that's really
well,
important to say.
and so
DALL-E's
that's
going to be
actually
doing
where I'm
significant
curious.
education.
Right, you know, there's absolutely no argument. Dolly has done created excellent resources, but you know, when we're talking about education, we're talking in a lot of cases about the people who are actually doing the installation work. And so it's a question of how do we get that information down to those people, because it feels as though there's sort of this barrier in from a lot of what people have said to us, especially because it's like, well, you know, yeah, you could have like an expert mind running the design side of things, but then when the documents hit the bid floor and somebody picks it up and doesn't actually fully understand it, you know, where does that education happen?
Yeah, the installers are a critical part of the partnership that puts this whole thing together. Critical. And
Absolutely.
not, again, in my opinion, not very well understood or appreciated by the professionals around them that have completely different competencies. So I believe we need to meet them where they live. You can't drag people into a, so for instance, IBEW, right? I mean, that's part of my plan is to reach out to them and talk to them about this whole thing. And I do know this much, IBEW is interested in increasing the range, the opportunities for their members. And they have every reason to want them to be educated. So we will do that. I mean, that coming back to that plan, that holistic picture, you have to have market pull, you have to have education for enablement, right? And then you can make it happen, right? So you've got to have that market pull, the education for enablement, and the education about how to install. Yeah. And that's what will make it happen. The cost stuff is, we talk, it's been talked about ad nauseum, right? The cost. And you say the real cost versus the invisible cost. The BOM is not more expensive. The issues around volume in North America are real.
Yep,
There are
sure.
things that you need to do in order to offer your drivers in North America, which are challenging. But again, once you do them, it's not rocket science. Once you do them, UL certification, etc., you're done. And now you've got access to the market. Now is the time to do that. I mentioned the tipping point at the beginning. I personally know and will not mention who or when or why or how folks are going to be bringing more product to this market, but I know that it's going to happen. That is a fact. Who's going to be here when and how quickly they'll move is not something I could know or anybody could predict, but it will happen and the cost will come down. And that is just the way that it works. And as soon as people see that tipping, they're going to say, oh gosh, did I wait too long? Because it's not, again, it's feasible to do. Yeah. I do not take lightly roadmaps, the work that's involved, the the sunk investments and sorry, I didn't turn off my phone. The sunk investments and, you know, what it takes to recover them. I've been in that role, literally been in that role where you're working for three different manufacturers where you have to face the music internally. And it's what is the business case? What is the pipeline going to be? What is my internal payback? It would be lovely if all these companies were organized in a manner so that they didn't have individual divisions that were accountable for their own profit, but that's not the real world. So I understand it. You know, I'm not judging it. I'm not being naive. I don't think I'm being naive. I'm just saying that from a business perspective, things are different now, and we can play or we cannot play. You know, it's not like we have to do this. If we would like to become commoditized and continue to be unimportant, look at you're laughing. It's like, okay, go there with the sarcasm, Carol.
No, I mean, absolutely.
It's nice to hear that you
real.
Want
it's
nice. The IBEW is a great start, right? It's a great start with the IBEW, but it's not as much the boots on ground guys, right? Which would be the first guys to probably get the training, right? It's the project estimators. It's the owners, because the estimator is the one looking at the spec sheet, sending it to the distributor, who also needs to be educated, and the distributor is then sending it to the rep. So we need the reps to be on board. We need the distributors to be on board. We need the project estimators and the owners of all those firms. Because the boots on ground guy does what he's doing.
Sorry about my face. I know my face is talking out loud. I'm sorry.
Right,
we have a really challenging channel. Am I saying anything that people don't know? We have a very challenging channel.
Very.
That is absolutely true.
Because the boots on ground, they just do what they're told. They just wire whatever they're told to wire. They just work with the system that was handed to them. It's everybody else in front of them. So how do we get more Dolly equipment into the distributors and, you know, in front of the reps to pick up those lines here in North America to start that process? Because until the reps are carrying those lines and putting it in front of the distributors to price, we're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, you're making an excellent point. Yes, there are all these different people through the channel need to be engaged. There's no scenario where it's going to happen overnight.
No.
When you see market, and I don't just mean that. What I mean by that is having been involved in multiple market transformation efforts over many years, and that is a thing, by the way. Market transformation is a thing. It is its own area of domain expertise, and a lot of people don't necessarily know that. I didn't know that. Years ago when I was a lighting designer, I didn't know that market transformation was actually a term of art. And it's a thing, you know, just like user experience, UX, you know, what do you do with your websites or all of these things are fields of expertise. In market transformation, you're looking for the triggers, the things that are going to make things, you know, work smarter, not harder. It's the concept of the trim tab, you know, which is a Bucky Fuller thing. It has to do with figuring out how the least amount of effort can create the greatest amount of change. And I believe that the installers have a lot of power and they have a lot of pushback. And I believe that when the manufacturers start to provide product and it starts to become a buzz, reps are not dumb. They are very savvy they're going to know. They're going to know, and they're going to look around and say, okay, do I have a competitive line? Do I have competitive, you know, products? And they'll start asking about it. You know, what do you have? What do you have? Can we do this? You know, can we do this with our controls line? It's going to be the thing that gets asked. And I don't see it. I see the reps as supporters and facilitators, boots on the ground, very much so. They're not going to be in opposition if the other market actors are on board, right? So if the owner wants it, if the operator wants it, and if you either do or don't do that. I'm thinking about this other cartoon I have, which is that the good news is that the customer complaints are down. The bad news is that we don't have any business, you know. So we, if that's what they want in that segment of the market where you're going to see the energy prices increasing, where you see this is where things always start to roll, is in the early adopters segment. And we know that it's going to be, you know, it'll go from the large to the medium to the, you know, and the retrofit market's always going to be the hardest because of the payback. We know all these things. The reps are involved in these projects. They're involved in the new construction major renovation projects. And so that's where it's going to start to happen. And I think they will not resist. I think they will support. Mm-hmm. Right? They're not going to hang themselves out to dry. But if there is demand, and if the manufacturers realize that we either play this way or we don't play at all,
right? Mm.
Then the folks in the middle will support. You know, and the installers, like I said before, the installers have to know how to do this. So if you're going to pick places where you start with your training and you start with your education, you cannot ignore the installers. Right. I mean, reps are picking things up all day long, right? They're figuring things out and they're picking it up, and it's fiercely competitive out there.
Yeah.
So they'll figure it out. I'm convinced of that.
We're almost out of time here, so I want to recap this because, I mean, this is such good stuff, and I really love hearing all of these bits of information and the cartoons that you have. I feel like we want to have like an archive of these cartoons that you're referring to with this podcast so that people can look at them because they're great cartoons. But anyway, so I mean, you know, from the landscape of lighting controls, when we're looking from even further out, you know, we're in our own silo. We are not interoperable in a lot of cases. We are treated as such, and we treat others as such. And so we're not part of this interoperability expectation that is starting to grow within the construction environment. You know, the built environment really is becoming a holistic, automated, streamlined experience for a lot of people, especially owners and facilities managers. And so we really should be part of that conversation, because otherwise we're going to get bulldozed and taken over by another group at some point. I mean, we've seen attempts of this in the past. We've seen market shift attempts where somehow we've managed to skirt by and not have it take over. But one way or the other, you know, due to electrification or other kinds of shifts within the needs of society, you know, this whole conversation is critical to success on future projects. And so, you know, the more we push back on this idea of being interoperable, the more risk and exposure we're putting ourselves out towards. And so one of the solutions to this is to start thinking about a digital system as opposed to an analog dimming system. Mm-hmm. You know, thinking about it in the sense of the driver is an entity and can respond to information and send you information about its status. You can query things.
Where does it go from there? Right.
Right. And so, you know,
right. So the up where, and people, right. People don't think about the up. You know, it's when you, I just did this presentation at education, and there's one slide that has two very, very simple drawings, electrical circuits going to the panel, backnet up to the BAS, right? We all know about that. And right. The other one was about lighting, communicating digitally, and not just lighting, but other use cases. So you've got, you've got other things that are reporting independently, the lift system, the access system, the cameras, the shades, they're all shooting up with their digital data into a platform, which is taking that information and trading it and working together, right? So if you have a gathering at 6:30 at night on the fourth floor east, and therefore the lifts are going to be going from the lobby to the fourth floor, right? So there's information about that based on the sensors and the occupancy where you want to know that for HVAC, and you want to know that for the restroom temperature, water temperature. You want to know that for all of these different things, split the lifts in half so they're one or the other, and you have plenty waiting on the fourth floor. and on and on and on and on, right? So if you don't share that information in a way that is nuanced from the perspective of lighting, if you don't have individual addresses, you can't do anything.
Right.
You can't. I mean, how do you manage peak load in a proper way from your conference room to your deli area to your retail store to your, how do you manage peak load? You can't just dim across an entire building and have it be equidistant and be it okay.
It's not okay.
So we must be thinking about going straight up to the platform. If you go through BACnet, you are losing that information. And that's where the power is. The power is in that individual addressability.
Well, and also, you know, when you're talking about, for instance, peak load demand response, so what we're talking about is when a utility sends a signal out and says, okay, you need to reduce the load you're consuming in this building. You know, if you just flat across dim everything to a certain percentage, you've also destroyed the effect that the lighting designer has put into that lighting design, because you're now just, you're going to the 80, 70, 60 format of programming, and you're no longer giving it that nuance like you were saying. And so, you know, having interoperability means two-way communication, not just one-way communication. It's not just a command that comes down from above and says, okay, this is what we're going to do going forward. It's, okay, we get this command. What are we going to do with that command now? And that's also part of this conversation. And I think not engaging with these resources that are cropping up, not finding ways to work with the restrictions or work with the requirements of the grid or other systems, really isolates us like that elephant in that glass room. And so, you know, being more active, being more engaged, being more aware of the technology that's out there really can help us make a step forward. And I think in North America, having this widespread adoption of 0 to 10 really shackles us to a technology that doesn't leverage that kind of information.
Yeah. A couple things I want to emphasize that, are not, you know, as you talk about the big picture, that are not well understood. First of all, DALI 2 is entirely different from DALI 1. And I'm not talking about the protocol. I'm talking about the fact that there is certification. DALI 2 is a certification program. D4i, which is the wireless, sits underneath that. And just 2 weeks ago in Frankfurt, 1 week ago, 2 weeks, right?
two weeks ago,
Lighting Building, DALI Thread certification was launched, which is about individual addresses, IP-based is the best way to describe it, IP-based protocol. So much has changed with DALI. There are all of these different extensions, emergency, for example, remote testing. These things have been growing and growing and improving over time. And the North American market is not aware of it. The, you know, other parts of the globe are much more aware of it. So I don't want to miss saying that, because I know that people have long memory and it didn't go perfectly the first time. Nothing goes perfectly the first time, right? We all have to be making adjustments as we go. Things are very different right now for DALI. So I just want to make sure to say that in a very simple way. And I also want to say that we are taking responsibility for this education. We are going to be educating. You're going to hear a lot more about DALI. And we're working with multiple partners. We're going to be working with LCA, you know, one of your sponsors, and ILD, and we're going to be having a specific DALI summit. This is not officially announced, so I'm going to put my caveat in here, but we are planning and hoping to have a DALI educational summit the day after New York Controlled in New York.
Which I think is great. I think that's such a cool, cool idea.
We're going to be, you know, it's going to be, you know, we'll be working together on, you know, two individual events, but we'll be working together on things. And we will be, you know, educating. We'll have something for the specifiers. We'll have something for the installers. You know, we're going to hit it. We'll have something for the manufacturers. You know, there there are a lot of people who have things to learn. My point is that it needs to happen, or we're going to continue to have these owners saying, "We're done with our lighting." What are you talking about? There's nothing left to do. And it doesn't have to be that way. So that's my main message, is to say, I get it. We've had problems with this for a long time. And things change, and it's not the same as it was on any level. And so we either carpe diem or we don't. So
that's right.
I'm going to do my best, my level best, to help folks be able to get on board with this.
Awesome. So. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Carol, for coming on today. It's been a fantastic conversation. We obviously have a lot of work to do as an industry. As individuals, well, you know, we can all do our part, right? But as an industry, we have a lot of work to do. And we really could learn from what's going on across the pond. And I don't know why we don't take some of that. But things have to change. And it's just a matter of how long this adoption takes. And this market transformation that is coming to North America is coming, whether people like it or not. Mm-hmm. It's coming. So really,
it's
thank
not
you
like
for
it's
your
not
time
like
today.
They don't want to come here. They do want to come right. here. Nobody isn't interested in the North American market, right? But why do it? It's the chicken or the egg. So it's, like I said, it is going to be different. There's tremendous expertise with European manufacturers. So, and wouldn't it be great if, you know, this is what I'm saying. Competition is competition. That's the dance.
Right. Yep. Well,
it was
awesome.
Great. It was
thank
great
you
to
so
be here,
much.
Guys.
This has been great. So really appreciate
absolutely.
Your time.
Favorite
I just
topic,
want to take a minute
anytime.
To remind everyone, today's episode is presented by the LCA, the Lighting Controls Association.
And it's financially supported by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, or NAILD. Check out our website, lightingcontrolspodcast.com. We've got all of our episodes, a newsfeed, merch store, our council on startup and integration, and educational resources, as well as check out our sponsor, MWConnect.us, no longer McWong, they're MW Connect now. Still the same great company, great products, been in the business for 40 years now. Congratulations on that. And they are creating excellent resources. They're part of this ongoing conversation about interoperability. They really want to be your product that you go to for your next project. Really check them out if you're not familiar with them, MWConnect.us. But thank you so much for joining us for now. And until then, we'll see you next time. Carol, thank you so much. This was an awesome conversation.